Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today, I will be talking about POSCO. POSCO is a South Korean steel maker, and it is also the third largest steel producer in the world. Today, we'll briefly go over the company's business, then review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios, and finally find the intrinsic value of the company. So let's dive in and review POSCO.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the company profile. POSCO is the largest steel producer in South Korea and one of the top steel producers globally. It mainly produces flat steel and stainless steel from its two integrated steel facilities. It is exposed to auto, shipbuilding, home appliance, engineering, and machinery industries. POSCO controls about 40% of South Korean domestic market share and exports about 45 to 50% of its steel products overseas, mainly to Asian countries. Through diversification, around 15 to 20% of its revenues come from non-steel and non-trading related businesses. Now let's look at the current events associated with POSCO. Earlier this week, POSCO announced that it plans on changing into a holding company system, where the POSCO holding company is not only going to have ownership of its steel manufacturing business, but it's also going to include POSCO Chemical, POSCO Energy, POSCO International, and POSCO ENC. POSCO says that the holding company's main job would include discovering future business drivers, managing investments, and coordinating research and development. The subsidiaries that are going to be created under the holding company are not going to have their own shareholders, primarily because it aims to eliminate the existing shareholders' concern that listing of these subsidiaries would dilute the existing shareholders' value. And lastly, POSCO's transition to a holding company system will be finalized at a shareholders' meeting, which is going to be held on January 28, 2022. Now that we have a brief understanding of POSCO's business and the five subsidiaries that are going to be created under the new POSCO holding company, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Over here, I'm on Morningstar looking at POSCO ADR. Under key ratios, I have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2011, the company's revenue was about 69 trillion South Korean won. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 70 trillion South Korean won. Over the past 10 years, the company's revenue from 2011 through 2016 saw a decline. And ever since 2016, the company's revenue, for the most part, has been trending upwards. Next, looking at the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2011, the company's operating income was about 5 trillion won. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 7.8 trillion won. Ideally, we want to see the company's operating income to be staying steady or increasing. Essentially, we want to see the company's operating income to have a similar trend as the company's revenue. Next is the net income. The net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it pays for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2011, the company's net income was about 3.7 trillion won. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 5.8 trillion won. Ideally, we want to see the company's net income numbers to be staying steady or increasing. Over the past 10 years, POSCO's net income numbers have been pretty volatile, which is fairly common in the steel industry. Over the past 10 years, POSCO's net income numbers have been positive, which tells us that despite the cyclical business, the company has always reported a profit. After that, looking at the dividends per share, back in 2011, the company paid out about 2,532 won per share as dividend. And for the trailing 12 months, that number had grown to about 4,085 won per share as dividend. Over the past 10 years, POSCO has consistently paid out dividends, which is certainly something that we want to see as shareholders. Next, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2011, the company had 309 million shares outstanding. That share count grew to about 320 million shares in 2015. And over the past couple of years, the company has been buying back its shares as the share count has dropped to about 305 million shares. The increase in the shares outstanding numbers is fairly common in a steel industry as it's a way for the company to finance its growth. However, as shareholders, we want to see the company to buy back its shares as when a company buys back its shares, it actually increases the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Next is the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2011, the company's book value was about $105.7 per share. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $137 per share. Ideally, we want to see the company's book value per share to be staying steady or increasing. And over the past 10 years, POSCO's book value for the most part has been trending upwards. Additionally, the company's book value has always been positive, which tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. From 2011 through 2014, the company had a negative free cash flow number, which was primarily because the company's capital spending exceeded its operating cash flow. However, in 2015, the company's free cash flow was about 4.7 trillion won. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 3.3 trillion won. Ideally, we wanted the company's free cash flow number to be positive, staying steady or increasing. I will be using the trailing 12-month figure of 3.291 trillion won for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2011, the company's net income was about 5.39%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 8.28%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in sales over the past 12 months, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had about $8.28 left as pure profit. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2011, the company's return on equity was about 10.14%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 12.38%. POSCO's return on equity numbers are rather subpar compared to the Buffett standard. However, there are a few ways that the company can improve its return on equity numbers. First is by improving its income numbers. Second is by taking on more debt. And third is by buying back more of its shares. Next is the return on invested capital. The return on invested capital gives us an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2011, the company's return on invested capital was about 7.07%. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 8.38%. POSCO's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 5.21%. And since the company's return on invested capital is greater than the company's weighted average cost of capital, we can safely say that the company's management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage is a ratio of the company's income to its interest obligations. So it gives us an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's interest coverage was about 2.24 times, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 18.02 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health and liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0. It's even better if it's greater than 1.5. A current ratio greater than 1.0 tells us that the company has enough assets to fulfill its liabilities over the next 12 months. Back in 2011, the company's current ratio was at 1.71, and for the latest quarter, it's at 2.36. Next is the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's quick ratio was at 1.01, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.59. Ideally, we want the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Both the current and quick ratios indicate that the company is liquid and is far away from being in a liquidity bind. Next is the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 1.0 tells us that all of the company's assets are financed via its shareholders' equity. A high financial leverage tells us that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's financial leverage was at 2.04, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.83. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has slowly been trending downwards, which is certainly something that we want to see. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2011, the company's debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.42, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.30. Over the past 10 years, the company's debt-to-equity ratio has always been less than 0.5. So both the financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios indicate that the company is living within its means and is not becoming top-heavy where it's stretching beyond its means. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2011, the company's day sales outstanding was about 43 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 52 days. Ideally, we want the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose day sales outstanding number is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company may be aggressive with its accounting as it's trying to aggressively recognize its sales sooner so that it can inflate its income numbers on its income statement. However, POSCO's Dales' outstanding numbers have stayed fairly consistent, which tells us that management is not playing any such accounting tricks. Next, looking at the days inventory. This number gives an idea of how many days does the company's products sit in its inventory before they're sold. Back in 2011, the company's days inventory was about 67 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 70 days. Ideally, we want the company's days inventory number to be staying steady or decreasing, and POSCO's days inventory number has stayed fairly consistent over the past 10 years. Next is the payables period. The payables period gives an idea of how many days does the company take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2011, POSCO took about 28.78 days to pay its suppliers, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 30.36 days. Ideally, we want the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose payables period is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company may be holding on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers on its cash flow statement. Similar to the company's days inventory, the company's payables period over the past 10 years has stayed fairly consistent. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, the inventory turnover goes hand in hand with the company's days inventory. The inventory turnover gives an idea of how many times does the company go through its inventory in a calendar year. Back in 2011, the company went through its inventory about 5.42 times, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 5.24 times. Over the past 10 years, the company's inventory turnover has stayed fairly consistent, which tells us that the company has maintained its efficiency when it comes to its inventory. Now let's compare the company's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States, and it is a good proxy for the opportunity cost for individual investors. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. POSCO's price-to-earnings is at 3.8, whereas S&P 500 is at 24. POSCO's price-to-book is at 0.4, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.4. POSCO's price-to-sales is at 0.3, whereas S&P 500 is at 3.1. POSCO's price-to-cash flow is at 3.4, whereas S&P 500 is at 17.7. And finally, the dividend yield. POSCO has a dividend yield of about 5.9%, whereas S&P 500 is at 1.5%. So we can see that on all these valuation metrics, POSCO is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Now let's look at POSCO's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Over here, I pasted POSCO's trailing 12-month free cash flow numbers that I got from Morningstar. The number was actually in a South Korean won currency, and I converted the currency to US dollar using the conversion rate, which equates to about $2,765 million for the company's trailing 12-month free cash flow. I'm using an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 4%. What this means is I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 4% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I want this investment to give me a 10% return. I'm using a long-term growth rate of about 2%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 2%. The company has 305 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of about $9,950 million. I got this number from the company's balance sheet. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the company's intrinsic value to be about $97.21 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price, which is about $61.13 per share, we can see that the company's current stock is trading about 37% below the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $20.6 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark in perpetuity. We sum all these up to get the intrinsic value to be about $39.6 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $97 per share. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that POSCO is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $35 per share. And finally, if we disregard the debt, in other words, if you think that POSCO is going to grow into perpetuity, so there's no point for the company to worry about paying off its debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $130 per share. So overall, POSCO seems to have good fundamentals. The company is not over-leveraged and overextended, so we know that the company is going to be around for a long period of time. When we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis, we found that the company's current stock price is about 37% below its intrinsic value. As we saw earlier in the video, the company is transitioning into a holding company structure. So rather than being overly dependent on just the steel business, the company is branching out and adding additional subsidiaries so that it can bring more revenue from its chemical, energy, construction, and international segments. By having this holding company structure, POSCO is going to do a better job at allocating its capital, and in doing so, it's going to unlock shareholder value. Finally, talking about the risks associated with investing in POSCO, we know that POSCO is an international security. So anytime we invest in an international company, we're exposed to any currency fluctuations. Additionally, POSCO is heavily dependent on Asian economy as majority of its revenue comes from Asia. So if there is an economic downturn in Asia, POSCO's revenue are likely to suffer. Superior North has POSCO as one of its investments in its portfolio. And if the company's stock price drops further, then Superior North will be buying more shares of this company. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on POSCO interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you.